Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question-and-answer session of today's call, you may press star one to ask a question. Today's conference is being recorded, and at this time, I turn the call over to Mr. Owen Grant. You may begin.
Thank you, Shirley. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Owen Grant, and I am the branch chief for CDC's News Media Branch. I wish to thank you all for joining us for today's telebriefing for CDC's Vital Signs report on Clostridium difficile, also known as C. difficile. Today's report represents a series of vital signs reports that illustrate CDC's commitment to saving lives, protecting people, and saving money through prevention. Here to discuss the C. difficile study is CDC's ATSDR's Principal Deputy Director, Ileana, which is spelled I-L-E-A-N-A, Arias, A-R-I-A-S, and Dr. Clifford, that's standard spelling, C-L-I-F-F-O-R-D, McDonald, standard spelling, M, small c, D-O-N-A-L-D, who is a medical epidemiologist with CDC's Division of Healthcare Quality Promotion and lead author of the study. Following their brief remarks, we will open the line up for questions. At this time, I would like to turn it over to Dr. Arias.
Thank you for joining us to discuss today's Vital Signs report. Vital Signs is a special MWR publication that highlights critical public health issues facing our nation. This month's Vital Sign is focused on healthcare-associated infections caused by a bacteria called C. difficile. C. difficile is a deadly diarrheal infection that poses a significant threat to U.S. healthcare patients. Our country has seen rates of other healthcare-associated infections, such as bloodstream infections, decline in recent years, but C. difficile has climbed and continues at historically high and unacceptable levels. Today's report serves as a national call to action for our healthcare system to make C. difficile prevention appropriately a high priority. This call to action includes the federal government, state and local health departments, healthcare facility administrators, individual doctors, nurses, technicians, and cleaning staff. Everyone with a hand in patient care has a role in preventing this deadly infection. C. difficile is causing many Americans to suffer and die. These infections are linked to at least 14,000 American deaths every year. This is a high number, but the failure is more difficult to accept because these are treatable, often preventable deaths. We know they don't have to happen. We know what can be done to do a better job of protecting our patients. Traditionally, C. difficile infections were thought to be a problem mostly for hospitals. But today's report shows that these infections are a patient safety concern in nursing homes and outpatient care settings as well. From a single clinician prescribing unnecessary antibiotics to a nurse or a doctor who doesn't recognize C. difficile symptoms and doesn't order a test, or a hospital aide forgetting to wear gloves while raising a C. difficile patient's bed, to medical teams that don't alert each other to C. difficile infections during patient transfers, we all have a role to play in stopping C. difficile. Fortunately, today's Vital Signs report also highlights that prevention is possible and how it can be accomplished. There are key steps both healthcare providers and patients can take to stop this deadly disease. To talk more about these prevention steps and new data being released today, I am pleased to introduce and turn the discussion over to Dr. Clifford McDonald.
Thank you, Dr. Arias, and thanks everyone again for joining us today. As has been mentioned, C. difficile is a formidable opponent that is causing many Americans to suffer or die, even as we've seen rates of other healthcare-associated infections decline. People most at risk from this deadly diarrheal infection are those who take antibiotics and also receive medical care in any setting. This could include a nursing home, hospital, doctor's office, or outpatient surgery center. Why is that? C. difficile infection most often requires a 1-2 punch of antibiotics plus medical care. Antibiotics destroy good bacteria that typically protect us from infection, leaving the door open for C. difficile to take over. If a person swallows C. difficile spores during this time of vulnerability, they can become infected. This usually happens in healthcare facilities after a patient picks up invisible C. difficile spores from contaminated surfaces, or if a healthcare provider directly spreads the spores to a patient and then the patient touches his or her face. There's an excellent graphic simply displaying a potential chain of infection in the fact sheet or on the website accompanying today's MMWR report. C. difficile infection risk generally increases with age. Children are at lower risk and older adults are at higher risk. Almost half of C. difficile infections occur in people younger than 65, yet 90% of deaths related to C. difficile occur in people 65 and older. Other major data points from today's report show us that 94% of C. difficile infections occur in people who recently received medical care. This includes people who were hospitalized when diagnosed, or perhaps in a nursing home. This also includes people who recently visited a doctor's office, had outpatient surgery, or received other care. In the past, a lot of C. difficile infections were considered to happen just generally in the community, but this report shows that most of these so-called community infections actually occur in people with recent exposure to medical facilities. Today's Vital Signs report also tells us that C. difficile should no longer be considered just a hospital problem. These infections are now a patient safety concern everywhere medical care is given. About 25% of C. difficile infections first show symptoms among patients in hospitals. 75% first show symptoms among patients in nursing homes or in patients recently cared for in doctor's offices or clinics. Although a minority of all infections first show symptoms in hospital patients, hospitals still play a central role in C. difficile prevention. This is because many of the most potent antibiotics are prescribed in hospitals today, and many infections first show symptoms soon after discharge from hospitals. Today's report also shows that 50% of cases diagnosed in hospitals come in the front door with patients who were transferred or recently discharged from other facilities. In other words, these infections are present on admission. The other half of infections diagnosed in hospitals are a result of care in that particular facility. What this means is that hospitals, and likely other medical facilities as well, are partly at the mercy of surrounding facilities. Because patients so often transfer back and forth between facilities or are seen by so many providers, an infection issue in one place can easily become a problem in another practice or facility too. This speaks to the need for strict adherence to infection prevention and control recommendations across all facility types and the need for greater care coordination. When CDC recommendations are followed well, we know C. difficile can be prevented. In fact, this report highlights three prevention projects that dropped C. difficile rates by an average of 20% by doing just this. This type of success is possible to achieve nationally. Specifically for clinicians, CDC recommends six steps to prevention. First, prescribe and use antibiotics carefully. About 50% of all antibiotics given are not needed, unnecessarily raising the risk of C. difficile infections. Second, test for C. difficile when patients have diarrhea while on antibiotics or within several months after taking them. Third, isolate patients with C. difficile immediately. Fourth, wear gloves and gowns when treating patients with C. difficile, even during short visits. Hand sanitizer does not kill C. difficile, and hand washing may not be sufficient. It is important to note that once C. difficile germs are on a healthcare provider's hands, they are hard to get off. It is much better to avoid getting them on your hands in the first place. Fifth, clean room surfaces with bleach or another EPA-approved spore-killing disinfectant after a patient with C. difficile has been treated there. And finally, when patients transfer, notify the new facility of C. difficile infections. For patients, we recommend the following. Antibiotics can be life-saving medications, but take them only as prescribed by your doctor. Tell your doctor if you have been on antibiotics and get diarrhea within a few months. Wash your hands after using the bathroom, and try to use a separate bathroom if you have diarrhea, or be sure the bathroom is cleaned well if someone with diarrhea has used it. As you can see, C. difficile is a formidable opponent. but one that we can stop. With that, I'll turn it back over to you, Dr. Arias.
Thank you, Dr. McDonald. I'd like to close our remarks with three key points from today's report. One, C. difficile is causing deadly diarrhea serious enough to sicken or kill many Americans. Two, C. difficile is not just a hospital problem, it's a patient safety concern in every type of medical patient care facility. And three, C. difficile can be prevented. As has just been described, medical leadership, clinicians, and cleaning staff can prevent these infections by following CDC recommendations. And patients even can help catch C. difficile early by telling their doctors if they have diarrhea within several months of taking antibiotics. We thank you all for joining us and helping us shine a spotlight on this important health topic and what can be done to improve. And we're now more than happy to take questions that you may have.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. You will be prompted to record your name. To withdraw your request, you may press star 2. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. And one moment for our first question. Our first question comes from Daniel Danoon with WebMD. You may ask your question.
Thank you for taking my question. I have two questions that are not related. My first one is, can you talk a little bit about the hypervirulent resistant strain of C. diff that seems to be a problem and how that is treated? I know the cartoon you show shows the people becoming cured pretty quickly after it's diagnosed and treated, but I wonder if you could talk a little more about this more resistant strain and the problem that poses. Now, let me just ask that question first, please.
Sure. The strain you're referring to is known as the North American Pulsefield Type 1 strain. We at CDC and colleagues first described this back in 2004. It continues to be a prevalent strain in U.S. healthcare facilities. This strain has been called hypervirulent because, for various reasons, including the production of increased amount of toxin. You mentioned its resistance. I would just clarify this is not resistance to the main antibiotics used to treat the infection, but resistance to other commonly used antibiotics that has given this strain a leg up on other strains, an advantage over other strains. You asked about the treatment of this strain and C. difficile in general. Usually, C. difficile infections are treated with an antibiotic. The FDA-approved antibiotic for C. difficile include vancomycin, oral vancomycin, and fidaxomicin. Another commonly used drug is metronidazole, and these antibiotics are generally given for 10 days.
Thank you very much. An unrelated question is the requirement of reporting by hospitals that will be coming up in the next year or so. Can you talk a little bit more about these new reporting rules that will begin in 2014?
So you're referring to the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services?
Yes, I am.
Requirement for hospitals to report for their annual payment update. This is commonly referred to as pay-for-reporting. This requirement, according to the common rule that we heard about last summer, will begin in 2013. All hospitals reimbursed under that system will likely begin reporting through the National Healthcare Safety Network, the CDC-run surveillance network. Those infections will be reported using the same mechanism that we talk about in this report under NHSN. They'll be reporting through 2013, and then in 2014, CMS will begin posting rates by hospital on the Hospital Compare website.
Next question, Shirley.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Mike Sobey. You may ask your question.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make sure I understood. The phrase call to action, you said this is a call to action. I just want to make sure I understand. What does that mean? Is it sort of a general description of we're trying to draw the public and the medical world's attention to this, or is there a certain level of activity that means you guys are spending X amount on an awareness campaign? I'm just wondering what that means exactly.
I think it is a focused, concerted action. It's bringing this infection, educating the public about this infection. When the public is informed, patients are informed, everyone is better off. The medical community is better off, and the entire system responds better. We're also, of course, looking at, as the previous question suggested, a period in the very near future where we'll have increased transparency and accountability about this infection.
Next question.
Our next question comes from Miriam Falco with CNN Medical News. You may ask your question.
Hi, thanks for taking our questions. You mentioned that other infectious diseases are going down, the hospital-acquired ones, but this one has been going up. And the question in my mind is, why are we still talking about educating hospitals about how to properly clean rooms, properly handle patients who have an infectious disease? Is it because they don't know the patient has C. diff, or why is it so difficult to do these basic things that would prevent these hospital-acquired or transmitted infectious diseases?
Well, that's a great question. These are human behaviors we're talking about. We're talking about changing practices, and on the surface, they appear very simple, and they are in many ways. On another aspect, we're talking about large organizations, and now we're talking also, as highlighted in the nursery report, the fact that there needs to be concerted action across different types of facilities. This is something somewhat new, and yet we think the health department especially has a particular role to bring different facilities together. This is highlighted in the report about how, and I mentioned also in my brief comments, about how one facility will be somewhat at the mercy of another facility, and that's why they really need to work together on this. The other thing is within even facilities, getting simple behavior changes affected can be challenging. And yet these 71 hospitals in these three states did accomplish this, and resulting in a 20% reduction in these infections. How did they do that? Well, it involved engagement of the hospital leadership. It involved using these recommended practices, educating on them, and sharing also. These hospitals share with one another under these, we call these collaboratives, these prevention programs, where they share with one another about how they implemented them. And finally, they use data for action. I mean, I think that there's a real reason for optimism here, especially as data becomes more available. These rates, we all become more transparent and plain to people. And I think that we are going to see, I'm optimistic that we're going to see this turn around.
Next question, Shirley.
Thank you. And that comes from Delcia Ricks with Newsday. You may ask your question.
Thank you very much. I was hoping one of you could tell me a little bit about the spores. You mentioned them. I'd like to know how long they survive on surfaces, and do people primarily ingest them? Do they rub them in their eyes? What exactly is the route through which people are infected?
Yeah, this organism does form spores. We mentioned that. It actually, when it's not in a spore form, it dies very quickly in the presence of oxygen, but in the spore it can persist in the environment for even months, and maybe even longer. Other spores we know can exist even longer. This spore is the infective form. This is what is, we said, swallowed, usually on the hands. Hands are contaminated. We touch our face all the time. And just that small ingestion, when you're vulnerable, and we emphasize that too, is that many people this doesn't affect at all if you haven't had antibiotics recently. But when you're made vulnerable, the ingestion or swallowing of those few spores passes down into the stomach. They're resistant to stomach acid. There in the intestine, they germinate. They come back to life and start growing.
Oh, my. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Cheryl Clark with Health Leaders Media for Healthcare Executives. You may ask your question.
Thank you very much. I wanted to ask a little bit more about antibiotic stewardship and for each, the hospital, the nursing home, and the physician's practice. What do you think should change from current practice today?
Well, stewardship is an area that we're actively working with several partners on, including the Infectious Disease Society of America, Society of Healthcare Epidemiology of America. We have a program called Get Smart that has been in existence for a number of years, focused mostly in the community, and now we also have part of this, which is Get Smart for Healthcare. And it really, as the name suggests, it's using antibiotics more wisely. They are life-saving drugs. They have allowed modern healthcare to do the wonderful things that we're achieving in modern healthcare. They aren't without risk, though. That's the point. So there's education always there of prescribers. That's always key. There's several key steps. One of them is just to take an antibiotic timeout, for example, reassess after a patient's been on the antibiotics for a day or two to see do they still need those antibiotics, ordering the appropriate cultures before the antibiotics are started, and then whenever possible, stopping antibiotics if they're no longer needed. There's a lot of different ways we could talk at length about how to implement all that, but these things have to happen in hospitals, as we mentioned already, but as you're alluding to also in nursing homes, in doctors' offices, across all the spectrum.
Is there a first line that should of antibiotic that should be tried instead of, say, another line? Or, you know,
there are some higher risk and lower risk antibiotics. I don't think we can get into that right now. I want to though put that also in the context that the 20% reductions we're seeing in these the 71 hospitals reported on here, antibiotic stewardship was somewhat the focus of one of these programs, one of the states, but overall, not a lot was done with antibiotic stewardship so far, and we think there's a lot more that can be done. But there's other steps that are key to bring out in addition. Antibiotic stewardship is the first, and it is one of the most important, and that's another reason for optimism as we do more with stewardship. But also diagnosing these infections rapidly, getting them diagnosed, getting patients into isolation, when they're in isolation, using gloves and gowns, and environmental cleaning, cleaning these rooms well, using a sporicidal disinfectant, EPA registered. And then finally, this idea of notifying patients as they're being transferred. This is, we're highlighting also, is very key.
You mean notifying the subsequent
Exactly. Notifying the subsequent facility that this patient either has an active infection or is recovered.
Okay, Shirley, we have time for two more calls.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Heidi Sleet with Family Practice News. You may ask your question.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm sort of following up a little bit on these, on the things that doctors can do. And I guess as far as testing, if patients have diarrhea while on antibiotics, is that an area where you have any idea of how often that's being done, or is that something that you would try and monitor, say, in an outpatient setting?
Yes, I'll mention a couple of things. First of all, that antibiotic-associated diarrhea is very common. Many people, when they're on the antibiotic, they might have some loose stools. C. difficile turns out to be only a proportion of that, maybe one-third of that. With that said, there are some clues. More than three unformed stools in a 24-hour period. Fever, abdominal pain. Diarrhea that continues once you've stopped the antibiotic, or maybe the diarrhea started only after the patient stopped the antibiotic, maybe a week later and it starts. These are all clues that it's C. difficile. Basically, though, especially in inpatient care facilities and also in outpatient care facilities, but especially inpatient care facilities, really leaning forward, if someone's been on antibiotics and they develop diarrhea, to think about C. difficile early and get them tested. And we also mentioned the importance of more accurate testing. And this is a highlight of a Medscape commentary that we have posted, and I refer you to that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our final question comes from Maren McKenna with Wired.com. Let me ask your question.
Thanks. Several times in discussing what needs to be done, you have mentioned the role of environmental services and cleaning in the hospital. And I was wondering if you could enlarge on that a bit. And what I'm particularly interested in is you're talking here about a really important infectious threat being prevented by the actions of some of the least paid and lowest status people on a facility's staff. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are about facilities bringing them into decision-making or motivating them or making them understand how important their role is.
I think that's a great question and a very good important point that we have been working with our partners on. In fact, some of our state partners, Illinois in particular, but I think all three states have focused on environmental services in their work with their hospitals. You're alluding to the fact that these individuals may have a high job turnover rate. There may even be language issues sometimes. Educating them, engaging them, helping them understand how critical they are in patient care safety and patient safety is very important, and we are working to do that. We've also developed some tools, ways of assessing the adequacy of cleaning. This is something else to point out, that just because something looks clean doesn't mean that it is clean. And so that's a very key point also.
I wish to thank you all for participating in today's telebriefing. To obtain a copy of the Vital Sign Report on C. difficile, please visit www.cdc.gov/vital signs, all one word. For more information about preventing C. difficile and other healthcare-associated infections, visit www.cdc.gov/HAI. A transcript will be available later this afternoon. For follow-up questions, please contact CDC's main press office at 404-639-3286. This concludes our media telebriefing, and thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, and this does conclude today's presentation. We thank you for your participation. At this time, you may disconnect your lines.